ceiling cracked and rained down heavy shingles. Confusion scattered the ranks as they tried to dodge the deadly barrage. Aragorn and Murtagh pressed against the wall to avoid the falling debris. Saphira roared again, and the soldiers fled, some getting crushed on the way. With a final titanic effort, Saphira tore off the rest of the ceiling before jumping into the banquet hall with her wings folded. Her weight splintered a table with a sharp crunch. Crying out with relief, Aragorn threw his arms around her. She hummed contentedly.
"I've missed you, little one."
"Same here. There's someone else with us. Can you carry three?"
"Of course," she said, kicking shingles and tables out of the way so she could take off.
Murtagh and Aragorn pulled the elf out of hiding. Saphira hissed in surprise as she saw her.
"An elf?"
"Yes, and the woman I saw in my dreams," said Aragorn, picking up Zarok.
He helped Murtagh secure the elf into the saddle, then they both climbed onto Saphira.
"I heard fighting on the roof. Are there men up there?"
"There were, but no more. Are you ready?"
"Yes."
Saphira leapt out of the banquet hall and onto the fortress's roof, where the bodies of watchmen lay scattered.
"Look,"
said Murtagh, pointing. A row of archers filed out of a tower on the other side of the roofless hall.
"Saphira, you have to take off, now!" warned Aragorn.
She unfurled her wings, ran toward the edge of the building, and propelled them over it with her powerful legs. The extra weight on her back made her drop alarmingly. As she struggled to gain altitude, Aragorn heard the musical twang of bowstrings being released. Arrows whizzed toward them in the dark. Saphira roared with pain as she was struck and quickly rolled to the left to avoid the next volley. More arrows perforated the sky, but the knight protected them from the shaft's deadly bite. Distressed, Aragorn bent over Saphira's neck.
"Where are you hurt?"
"My wings are pierced. One of the arrows didn't go all the way through. It's still there."
Her breathing was labored and heavy.
"How far can you take us?"
"Far enough."
Aragorn clutched the elf tightly as they skimmed over Gilead, then left the city behind and veered eastward, soaring upward through the night. A warrior and a healer. Saphira drifted down to a clearing, landed on the crest of a hill, and rested her outstretched wings on the ground. Aragorn could feel her shaking beneath him. They were only a half league from Gilead. Picketed in the clearing were Snowfire and Tornak, who snorted nervously at Saphira's arrival. Aragorn slid to the ground and immediately turned to Saphira's injuries, while Murtagh readied the horses. Unable to see well in the darkness, Aragorn ran his hands blindly over Saphira's wings. He found three places where arrows had punctured the thin membrane, leaving bloody holes as thick around as his thumb. A small piece had also been torn out of the back edge of her left wing. She shivered when his fingers brushed the injuries. He tiredly healed the wounds with words from the ancient language. Then he went to the arrow that was embedded in one of the large muscles of her flying arm. The arrowhead poked through its underside. Warm blood dripped off it. Aragorn called Murtagh over and instructed, "Hold her wing down. I have to remove this arrow." He indicated where Murtagh should grip.
"This will be painful," he warned Saphira, "but it'll be over quickly. Try not to struggle. You'll hurt us."
She extended her neck and grabbed a tall sapling between her curved teeth. With a yank of her head, she pulled the tree out of the ground and clamped it firmly in her jaws.
"I'm ready."
"Okay," said Aragorn.
"Hold on," he whispered to Murtagh, then broke off the head of the arrow. Trying not to cause any more damage, he swiftly pulled the shaft out of Saphira. As it left her muscle, she threw back her head and whimpered past the tree in her mouth. Her wing jerked involuntarily, clipping Murtagh under the chin and knocking him to the ground. With a growl, Saphira shook the tree, spraying them with dirt before tossing it away. After Aragorn sealed the wound, he helped Murtagh up.
"She caught me by surprise," admitted Murtagh, touching his scraped jaw.
"I'm sorry."
"She didn't mean to hit you," assured Aragorn. He checked on the unconscious elf.
"You're going to have to carry her a bit longer," he told Saphira. "We can't take her on the horses and ride fast enough. Flying should be easier for you now that the arrow is out."
Saphira dipped her head.
"I will do it."
"Thank you," said Aragorn.
He hugged her fiercely.
"What you did was incredible. I'll never forget it."
Her eyes softened.
"I will go now."
He backed away as she flew up in a flurry of air, the elf's hair streaming back. Seconds later, they were gone. Aragorn hurried to Snowfire, pulled himself into the saddle and galloped away with Murtagh. While they rode, Aragorn tried to remember what he knew about elves. They had long lives. That fact was oft repeated, although he knew not how long. They spoke the ancient language, and many could use magic. After the riders' fall, elves had retreated into seclusion. None of them had been seen in the Empire since.
So why is one here now? And how did the Empire manage to capture her? If she can use magic, she's probably drugged as I was.
They travelled through the night, not stopping even when their flagging strength began to slow them. They continued onward despite burning eyes and clumsy movements. Behind them, lines of torch-bearing horsemen searched around Gilead for their trail. After many bleary hours, dawn lightened the sky. By unspoken consent, Aragorn and Murtagh stopped the horses. "We have to make camp," said Aragorn wearily.
"I must sleep, whether they catch us or not."
"Agreed," said Murtagh, rubbing his eyes. "Have Saphira land. We'll meet her." They followed Saphira's directions and found her drinking from a stream at the base of a small cliff, the elf still slouched on her back. Saphira greeted them with a soft bugle as Aragorn dismounted. Murtagh helped him remove the elf from Saphira's saddle and lower her to the ground. Then they sagged against the rock face, exhausted. Saphira examined the elf curiously.
"I wonder why she hasn't woken. It's been hours since we left Gilead."
"Who knows what they did to her," said Aragorn grimly.
Murtagh followed their gaze. "As far as I know, she's the first elf the king has captured. Ever since they went into hiding, he's been looking for them without success, until now. So he's either found their sanctuary, or she was captured by chance." "I think it was chance. If he had found the elf haven, he would have declared war and sent his army after the elves. Since that hasn't happened, the question is, were Galbatorix's men able to extract the elf's location before we rescued her?"
"We won't know until she regains consciousness. Tell me what happened after I was captured. How did I end up in Gilead?"
"The Urgals are working for the Empire," said Murtagh shortly, pushing back his hair. "And it seems the Shade as well. Saphira and I saw the Urgals give you to him, though I didn't know who it was at the time, and a group of soldiers. They were the ones who took you to Gilead."
"It's true," said Saphira,
curling up next to them. Aragorn's mind flashed back to the Urgals he had spoken with at Tirm, and the master they had mentioned.
"They meant the king. I insulted the most powerful man in Alagazia," he realized with dread.
Then he remembered the horror of the slaughtered villagers in Yazuak. A sick, angry feeling welled in his stomach.
"The Urgals were under Galbatorix's orders. Why would he commit such an atrocity on his own subjects?"
"Because he is evil," stated Saphira flatly.
Glowering, Aragorn exclaimed,
"This will mean war.
Once the people of the Empire learn of it, they will rebel and support the Varden." Murtagh rested his chin in his hand. "Even if they heard of this outrage, few would make it to the Varden. With the Urgals under his command, the king has enough warriors to close the Empire's borders and remain in control no matter how disruptive people are. With such a rule of terror, he will be able to shape the Empire however he wants. And though he is hated, people could be galvanized into joining him if they had a common enemy."
"Who would that be?"
asked Aragorn, confused. "The elves and the Varden. With the right rumors, they can be portrayed as the most despicable monsters in Alagazia, fiends who are waiting to seize your land and wealth. The Empire could even say that the Urgals have been misunderstood all this time, and that they are really friends and allies against such terrible enemies. I only wonder what the king promised them in return for their services."
"It wouldn't work," said Aragorn, shaking his head. "No one could be deceived that easily about Galbatorix and the Urgals. Besides, why would he want to do that? He's already in power."
"But his authority is challenged by the Varden, with whom people sympathize. There is also Subda, which has defied him since it seceded from the Empire. Galbatorix is strong within the Empire, but his arm is weak outside of it.
As for people seeing through his deceptions, they'll believe whatever he wants them to. It's happened before.
Murtagh fell silent and gazed moodily into the distance. His words troubled Aragorn. Saphira touched him with her mind.
Where is Galbatorix sending the Urgals?
What?
In both Carvajal and Tirm, you heard that Urgals were leaving the area and migrating southeast as if to brave the Haderach Desert. If the king truly does control them, why is he sending them in that direction? Maybe an Urgal army is being gathered for his private use, or an Urgal city is being formed.
Aragorn shuddered at the thought.
I'm too tired to figure it out. Whatever Galbatorix's plans, they'll only cause us trouble. I just wish that we knew where the Vardan are. That's where we should be going, but we're lost without Dawmnad. It doesn't matter what we do, the Empire will find us.
Don't give up,
she said encouragingly, then added dryly,
though you're probably right.
Thanks.
He looked at Murtagh. You risked your life to rescue me. I owe you for that. I couldn't have escaped on my own. It was more than that, though. There was a bond between them now, welded in the brotherhood of battle and tempered by the loyalty Murtagh had shown. I'm just glad I could help. Murtagh faltered and rubbed his face. My main worry now is how we're going to travel with so many men searching for us. Gilead's soldiers will be hunting us tomorrow. Once they find the horse's tracks, they'll know you didn't fly away with Saphira. Aragorn glumly agreed. How did you manage to get into the castle? Murtagh laughed softly. By paying a steep bribe and crawling through a filthy scullery chute. But the plan wouldn't have worked without Saphira. She... He stopped and directed his words at her. That is, you are the only reason we escaped alive. Aragorn solemnly put a hand on her scaly neck. As she hummed contentedly, he gazed at the elf's face, captivated. Reluctantly, he dragged himself upright. We should make a bed for her. Murtagh got to his feet and stretched out a blanket for the elf. When they lifted her onto it, the cuff of her sleeve tore on a branch. Aragorn began to pinch the fabric together, then gasped. The elf's arm was mottled with a layer of bruises and cuts. Some were half-healed, while others were fresh and oozing. Aragorn shook his head with anger and pulled the sleeve up higher. The injuries continued to her shoulder. With trembling fingers, he unlaced the back of her shirt, dreading what might be under it. As the leather slipped off, Murtagh cursed. The elf's back was strong and muscled, but it was covered with scabs that made her skin look like dry, cracked mud. She had been whipped mercilessly and branded with hot irons in the shape of claws. Where her skin was still intact, it was purple and black from numerous beatings. On her left shoulder was a tattoo inscribed with indigo ink. It was the same symbol that had been on the sapphire of Brom's ring. Aragorn silently swore an oath that he would kill whoever was responsible for torturing the elf. "Can you heal this?" asked Murtagh. "I don't know," said Aragorn. He swallowed back sudden queasiness. "There's so much!"
"Aragorn,"
said Saphira sharply.
"This is an elf. She cannot be allowed to die. Tired or not, hungry or not, you must save her. I will meld my strength with yours, but you are the one who must wield the magic."
"Yes, you are right," he murmured, unable to tear his eyes from the elf.
Determined, he pulled off his gloves and said to Murtagh, "This is going to take some time. Can you get me food? Also, boil rags for bandages. I can't heal all her wounds."
"We can't make a fire without being seen," objected Murtagh. "You'll have to use unwashed cloths and the food will be cold."
Aragorn grimaced, but acquiesced. As he gently laid a hand on the elf's spine, Saphira settled next to him, her glittering eyes fixed on the elf. He took a deep breath, then reached for the magic and started working. He spoke the ancient words.
"Waze-ay heal!"
A burn shimmered under his palm, and new unmarked skin flowed over it, joining together without a scar. He passed over bruises or other wounds that were not life-threatening. Healing them all would consume the energy he needed for more serious injuries. As Aragorn toiled,
He marvelled that the elf was still alive. She had been repeatedly tortured to the edge of death with a precision that chilled him. Although he tried to preserve the elf's modesty, he could not help but notice that underneath the disfiguring marks, her body was exceptionally beautiful. He was exhausted and did not dwell on it, though his ears turned red at times, and he fervently hoped that Saphira did not know what he was thinking. He labored through dawn, pausing only at brief intervals to eat and drink, trying to replenish himself from his fast, the escape, and now healing the elf. Saphira remained by his side, lending her strength where she could. The sun was well into the sky when he finally stood, groaning as his cramped muscles stretched. His hands were grey and his eyes felt dry and gritty. He stumbled to the saddlebags and took a long drink from the wineskin.
"Is it done?" asked Murtagh.
Aragorn nodded, trembling. He did not trust himself to speak. The camp spun before him. He nearly fainted.
"You did well," said Saphira soothingly.
"Will she live?" "I don't know," he said in a ravaged voice. "Elves are strong, but even they cannot endure abuse like this with impunity. If I knew more about healing, I might be able to revive her, but—" He gestured helplessly. His hand was shaking so badly he spilled some of the wine. Another swig helped to steady him. "We'd better start riding again."
"No, you must sleep," protested Murtagh.
"I can sleep in the saddle, but we can't afford to stay here, not with the soldiers closing on us."
Murtagh reluctantly gave in.
"In that case, I'll lead Snowfire while you rest."
They resaddled the horses, strapped the elf onto Saphira, and departed the camp. Aragorn ate while he rode, trying to replace his depleted energy, before he leaned forward against Snowfire and closed his eyes.
Water from Sand. When they stopped for the evening, Aragorn felt no better, and his temper had worsened. Most of the day had been spent on long detours to avoid detection by soldiers with hunting dogs. He dismounted Snowfire and asked Saphira,
"How is she?"
"I think no worse than before. She stirred slightly a few times, but that was all."
Saphira crouched low to the ground to let him lift the elf out of the saddle. For a moment her soft form pressed against Aragorn, then he hurriedly put her down. He and Murtagh made a small dinner. It was difficult for them to fight off the urge to sleep. When they had eaten, Murtagh said, "We can't keep up this pace. We aren't gaining any ground on the soldiers. Another day or two of this and they'll be sure to overtake us." "What else can we do?" snapped Aragorn. "If it were just the two of us and you were willing to leave Tornaq behind, Saphira could fly us out of here. But with the elf too? Impossible." Murtagh looked at him carefully.
"If you want to go your own way, I won't stop you. I can't expect you and Saphira to stay and risk imprisonment."
"Don't insult me," Aragorn muttered. "The only reason I'm free is because of you. I'm not going to abandon you to the Empire. Poor thanks that would be."
Murtagh bowed his head. "Your words hearten me." He paused. "But they don't solve our problem."
"What can?" Aragorn asked. He gestured at the elf.
"I wish she could tell us where the elves are. Perhaps we could seek sanctuary with them."
"Considering how they've protected themselves, I doubt she'd reveal their location. Even if she did, the others of her kind might not welcome us. Why would they want to shelter us anyway? The last riders they had contact with were Galbatorix and the Forsworn. I doubt that left them with pleasant memories. And I don't even have the dubious honor of being a rider like you. Nor they would not want me at all."
"They would accept us," said Saphira confidently as she shifted her wings to a more comfortable position.
Aragorn shrugged. "Even if they would protect us, we can't find them, and it's impossible to ask the elf until she regains consciousness. We must flee, but in which direction? North, south, east, or west?"
Murtagh laced his fingers together and pressed his thumbs against his temples.
"I think the only thing we can do is leave the Empire. The few safe places within it are far from here. They would be difficult to reach without being caught or followed."
"There's nothing for us to the north, except the forest due Weldenvarden, which we might be able to hide in, but I don't relish going back past Gilead. Only the Empire and the sea lie westward. To the south is Sirdar, where you might be able to find someone to direct you to the Varden. As for going east, he shrugged, to the east, the Adarak Desert stands between us and whatever lands exist in that direction. The Vardan are somewhere across it, but without directions it might take us years to find them.
We would be safe, though, remarked Saphira, as long as we didn't encounter any Urgals.
Aragorn knitted his brow. A headache threatened to drown his thoughts in hot throbs. It's too dangerous to go to Cirda. We would have to traverse most of the Empire, avoiding every town and village. There are too many people between us and Cirda to get there unnoticed. Murtagh raised an eyebrow. So you want to go across the desert? I don't see any other options. Besides, that way we can leave the Empire before the Razak get here. With their flying steeds, they'll probably arrive in Gilead in a couple of days, so we don't have much time. Even if we do reach the desert before they get here, said Murtagh, they could still overtake us. It'll be hard to outdistance them at all. Aragorn rubbed Saphira's side, her scales rough under his fingers. That's assuming they can follow our trail. To catch us, though, they'll have to leave the soldiers behind, which is to our advantage. If it comes to a fight, I think the three of us can defeat them, as long as we aren't ambushed the way Brom and I were. If we reach the other side of the Adarak safely, said Murtagh slowly, where will we go? Those lands are well outside of the Empire. There will be few cities, if any. And then there is the desert itself. What do you know of it? Only that it's hot, dry, and full of sand, confessed Aragorn. That about sums it up, replied Murtagh. It's filled with poisonous and inedible plants, venomous snakes, scorpions, and a blistering sun. You saw the Great Plain on our way to Gilead. It was a rhetorical question, but Aragorn answered anyway. Yes, and once before. Then you are familiar with its immense range. It fills the heart of the Empire. Now, imagine something 2 or 3 times its size, and you'll understand the vastness of the Adarak Desert. That is what you're proposing to cross. Aragorn tried to envision a piece of land that gigantic, but was unable to grasp the distances involved. He retrieved the map of Alagazia from his saddlebags. The parchment smelled musty as he unrolled it on the ground. He inspected the plains and shook his head in amazement. No wonder the Empire ends at the desert. Everything on the other side is too far away for Galbatorix to control. Murtagh swept his hand over the right side of the parchment. All the land beyond the desert, which is blank on this map, was under one rule when the riders lived. If the king were to raise up new riders under his command, it would allow him to expand the Empire to an unprecedented size. But that wasn't the point I was trying to make. The Adarak Desert is so huge and contains so many dangers, the chances are slim that we can cross it unscathed. It is a desperate path to take. We are desperate, said Aragorn firmly. He studied the map carefully. If we rode through the belly of the desert, it would take well over a month, perhaps even 2, to cross it. But if we angled southeast toward the Beor Mountains, we could cut through much faster. Then we can either follow the Beor Mountains further east into the wilderness, or go west to Cirda. If this map is accurate, the distance between here and the Beors is roughly equal to what we covered on our way to Gilead. But that took us nearly a month. Aragorn shook his head impatiently. Our ride to Gilead was slow on account of my injuries. If we press ourselves, it'll take only a fraction of that time to reach the Beor Mountains. Enough. You made your point, acknowledged Murtagh. Before I consent, however, something must be solved. As I'm sure you noticed, I bought supplies for us and the horses while I was in Gilead. But how can we get enough water? The roving tribes who live in the Adarak usually disguise their wells and oases so no one can steal their water, and carrying enough for more than a day is impractical. Just think about how much Saphira drinks. She and the horses consume more water at one time than we do in a week. Unless you can make it rain whenever we need, I don't see how we can go the direction you propose. Aragorn rocked back on his heels. Making rain was well beyond his power. He suspected that not even the strongest rider could have done it. Moving that much air was like trying to lift a mountain. He needed a solution that would not drain all of his strength. I wonder if it's possible to convert sand into water. That would solve our problem, but only if it doesn't take too much energy. I have an idea, he said. Let me experiment, then I'll give you an answer. Aragorn strode out of the camp, with Saphira following closely.
"What are you going to try?"
she asked. "I don't know," he muttered.
"Saphira, could you carry enough water for us?"
She shook her enormous head.
"No, I wouldn't even be able to lift that much weight, let alone fly with it."
"Too bad." He knelt and picked up a stone with a cavity large enough for a mouthful of water. He pressed a clump of dirt into the hollow and studied it thoughtfully. Now came the hard part. Somehow he had to convert the dirt into water.
But what word should I use?
He puzzled over it for a moment, then picked two he hoped would work. The icy magic rushed through him as he breached the familiar barrier in his mind and commanded, "Deloy moi!" Immediately the dirt began to absorb his strength at a prodigious rate. Aragorn's mind flashed back to Brom's warning that certain tasks could consume all of his power and take his life. Panic blossomed in his chest. He tried to release the magic, but could not. It was linked to him until the task was complete, or he was dead. All he could do was remain motionless, growing weaker every moment. Just as he became convinced that he would die kneeling there, the dirt shimmered and morphed into a thimbleful of water. Relieved, Aragorn sat back, breathing hard. His heart pounded painfully, and hunger gnawed at his innards.
"What happened?"
asked Saphira. Aragorn shook his head, still in shock from the drain on his body's reserves. He was glad that he had not tried to transmute anything larger.
This won't work," he said. "I don't even have the strength to give myself a drink."
"You should have been more careful,"
she chided.
"Magic can yield unexpected results when the ancient words are combined in new ways."
He glared at her.
"I know that, but this was the only way I could test my idea. I wasn't going to wait until we were in the desert."
He reminded himself that she was only trying to help.
"How did you turn Brom's grave into a diamond without killing yourself? I can barely handle a bit of dirt, much less all that sandstone."
"I don't know how I did it," she stated calmly. "It just happened."
"Could you do it again? But this time, make water?"
"Aragorn,"
she said, looking him squarely in the face,
"I've no more control over my abilities than a spider does. Things like that occur whether I will them or not. Brom told you that unusual events happen around dragons. He spoke truly. He gave no explanation for it, nor do I have one. Sometimes I can work changes just by feel, almost without thought. The rest of the time, like right now, I'm as powerless as snowfire."
"You're never powerless," he said softly, putting a hand on her neck.
For a long period they were both quiet. Aragorn remembered the grave he had made and how Brom lay within it. He could still see the sandstone flowing over the old man's face.
"At least we gave him a decent burial," he whispered.
He idly swirled a finger in the dirt, making twisting ridges. Two of the ridges formed a miniature valley, so he added mountains around it. With his fingernail, he scratched a river down the valley, then deepened it because it seemed too shallow. He added a few more details until he found himself staring at a passable reproduction of Palancar Valley. Homesickness welled up within him, and he obliterated the valley with a swipe of his hand.
"I don't want to talk about it,"
he muttered angrily, staving off Saphira's questions. He crossed his arms and glared at the ground. Almost against his will, his eyes flicked back to where he had gouged the earth. He straightened, surprised. Though the ground was dry, the furrow he had made was lined with moisture. Curious, he scraped away more dirt and found a damp layer a few inches under the surface.
"Look at this," he said excitedly.
Saphira lowered her nose to his discovery.
"How does this help us? Water in the desert is sure to be buried so deeply we would have to dig for weeks to find it."
"Yes," said Aragorn delightedly. "But as long as it's there, I can get it. Watch."
He deepened the hole, then mentally accessed the magic. Instead of changing the dirt into water, he simply summoned forth the moisture that was already in the earth. With a faint trickle, water rushed into the hole. He smiled and sipped from it. The liquid was cool and pure, perfect for drinking.
"See, we can get all we need."
Saphira sniffed the pool.
Here, yes. But in the desert, there may not be enough water in the ground for you to bring to the surface.
It will work, Aragorn assured her. All I'm doing is lifting the water, an easy enough task. As long as it's done slowly, my strength will hold. Even if I have to draw the water from 50 paces down, it won't be a problem, especially if you help me.
Saphira looked at him dubiously.
Are you sure? Think carefully upon your answer, for it will mean our lives if you are wrong.
Aragorn hesitated, then said firmly,
I'm sure.
Then go tell Murtagh. I will keep watch while you sleep.
But you stayed up all night like us, he objected. You should rest.
I'll be fine. I'm stronger than you know,
she said gently. Her scales rustled as she curled up with a watchful eye turned northward toward their pursuers. Aragorn hugged her, and she hummed deeply, sides vibrating.
Go!
He lingered, then reluctantly returned to Murtagh, who asked, Well, is the desert open to us? It is, acknowledged Aragorn. He flopped onto his blankets and explained what he had learned. When he finished, Aragorn turned to the elf. Her face was the last thing he saw before falling asleep. The Ramur River. They forced themselves to rise early in the grey pre-dawn hours. Aragorn shivered in the cool air. How are we going to transport the elf? She can't ride on Saphira's back much longer without getting sores from her scales. Saphira can't carry her in her claws. It tires her and makes landing dangerous. A sledge won't work. It would get battered to pieces while we ride, and I don't want the horses slowed by the weight of another person. Murtagh considered the matter as he saddled Tornak. If you were to ride Saphira, we could lash the elf onto Snowfire, but we'd have the same problem with sores.
I have a solution, said Saphira unexpectedly. Why don't you tie the elf to my belly? I'll still be able to move freely, and she will be safer than anywhere else. The only danger will be if soldiers shoot arrows at me, but I can easily fly above those.
None of them could come up with a better idea, so they quickly adopted hers. Aragorn folded one of his blankets in half lengthwise, secured it around the elf's petite form, then took her to Saphira. Blankets and spare clothes were sacrificed to form ropes long enough to encircle Saphira's girth. With those ropes, the elf was tied back first against Saphira's belly, her head between Saphira's front legs. Aragorn looked critically at their handiwork. I'm afraid your scales may rub through the ropes. We'll have to check them occasionally for fraying, commented Murtagh.
Shall we go now?
Saphira asked, and Aragorn repeated the question. Murtagh's eyes sparked dangerously, a tight smile lifting his lips. He glanced back the way they had come, where smoke from soldiers' camps was clearly visible, and said, I always did like races. And now we are in one for our lives. Murtagh swung onto Tornak's saddle and trotted out of the camp. Aragorn followed close behind on Snowfire. Saphira jumped into the air with the elf. She flew low to the ground to avoid being seen by the soldiers. In this fashion, the three of them made their way southeast, toward the distant Hadarach Desert. Aragorn kept a quick eye out for pursuers as he rode. His mind repeatedly wandered back to the elf.
An elf! He had actually seen one, and she was with them. He wondered what Roram would think of that.
It struck him that if he ever returned to Carver Hall, he would have a hard time convincing anyone that his adventures had actually occurred. For the rest of the day, Aragorn and Murtagh sped through the land, ignoring discomfort and fatigue. They drove the horses as hard as they could without killing them. Sometimes they dismounted and ran on foot to give Tornak and Snowfire a rest. Only twice did they stop, both times to let the horses eat and drink. Though the soldiers of Gilead were far behind now, Aragorn and Murtagh found themselves having to avoid new soldiers every time they passed a town or village. Somehow the alarm had been sent ahead of them. Twice they were nearly ambushed along the trail, escaping only because Saphira happened to smell the men ahead of them. After the second incident, they avoided the trail entirely. Dusk softened the countryside as evening drew a black cloak across the sky. Through the night they travelled, relentlessly pacing out the miles. In the deepest hours of night, the ground rose beneath them to form low, cactus-dotted hills. Murtagh pointed forward. There is a town, Bullridge, some leagues ahead that we must bypass. They're sure to have soldiers watching for us. We should try to slip past them now while it's dark.
After 3 hours, they saw the straw-yellow lanterns of Bullridge. A web of soldiers patrolled between watchfires scattered around the town. Aragorn and Murtagh muffled their sword sheaths and carefully dismounted. They led the horses in a wide detour around Bullridge, listening attentively to avoid stumbling on an encampment. With the town behind them, Aragorn relaxed slightly. Daybreak finally flooded the sky with a delicate blush and warmed the chilly night air. They halted on the crest of a hill to observe their surroundings. The Rama River was to their left, but it was also 5 miles to their right. The river continued south for several leagues, then doubled back on itself in a narrow loop before curving west. They had covered over 16 leagues in one day. Aragorn leaned against Snowfire's neck, happy with the distance they had gone. "Let's find a gully or hollow where we can sleep undisturbed." They stopped at a small stand of juniper trees and laid their blankets beneath them. Saphira waited patiently as they untied the elf from her belly.
"I'll take the first watch and wake you at mid-morning," said Murtagh, setting his bare sword across his knees.
Aragorn mumbled his assent and pulled the blankets over his shoulders. Nightfall found them worn and drowsy, but determined to continue. As they prepared to leave, Saphira observed to Aragorn,
"This is the third night since we rescued you from Gilead, and the elf still hasn't woken. I'm worried." "And," she continued, "she has neither drunk nor eaten in that time. I know little of elves, but she is slender, and I doubt she can survive much longer without nourishment."
"What's wrong?"
asked Murtagh over Tornak's back. "The elf," said Aragorn, looking down at her. "Saphira is troubled that she hasn't woken or eaten. It disturbs me, too. I healed her wounds, at least on the surface, but it doesn't seem to have done her any good."
"Maybe the shade tampered with her mind," suggested Murtagh.
"Then we have to help her."
Murtagh knelt by the elf. He examined her intently, then shook his head and stood.
"As far as I can tell, she's only sleeping. It seems as if I could wake her with a word or a touch, yet she slumbers on. Her coma might be something elves self-induced to escape the pain of injury, but if so, why doesn't she end it? There's no danger to her now."
"But does she know that?" asked Aragorn quietly.
Murtagh put a hand on his shoulder.
"This must wait. We have to leave now, or risk losing our hard-won lead. You can tend to her later when we stop."
"One thing first," said Aragorn. He soaked a rag, then squeezed the cloth, so water dripped between the elf's sculpted lips. He did that several times, and dabbed above her straight angled eyebrows, feeling oddly protective. They headed through the hills, avoiding the tops for fear of being spotted by sentries. Saphira stayed with them on the ground for the same reason. Despite her bulk, she was stealthy. Only her tail could be heard scraping over the ground like a thick blue snake. Eventually the sky brightened in the east. The morning star Adale appeared as they reached the edge of a steep bank covered with mounds of brush. Water roared below as it tore over boulders and sluiced through branches.
"The rammer," said Aragorn over the noise.
Murtagh nodded. "Yes, we have to find a place to ford safely."
"That isn't necessary," said Saphira. "I can carry you across, no matter how wide the river is."
Aragorn looked up at her blue-gray form.
"What about the horses? We can't leave them behind. They're too heavy for you to lift."
"As long as you're not on them and they don't struggle too much, I'm sure that I can carry them. If I can dodge arrows with 3 people on my back, I can certainly fly a horse in a straight line over a river."
"I believe you, but let's not attempt it unless we have to. It's too dangerous."
She clambered down the embankment.
"We can't afford to squander time here."
Aragorn followed her, leading Snowfire. The bank came to an abrupt end at the rammer, where the river ran dark and swift. White mist wafted up from the water like blood steaming in winter. It was impossible to see the far side. Murtagh tossed a branch into the torrent and watched it race away, bobbing on the rough water.
"How deep do you think it is?" asked Aragorn.
"I can't tell," said Murtagh, worry colouring his voice. "Can you see how far across it is with magic?"
"I don't think so, not without lighting up this place like a beacon."
With a gust of air, Saphira took off and soared over the rammer, After a short time she said,
"I'm on the other bank. The river is over a half mile wide. You couldn't have chosen a worse place to cross. The rammer bends at this point and is at its widest."
"A half mile!" exclaimed Aragorn. He told Murtagh about Saphira's offer to fly them.
"I'd rather not try it for the horse's sake. Tornak isn't as accustomed to Saphira as Snowfire. He might panic and injure them both.
Ask Saphira to look for shallows where we can swim over safely. If there aren't any within a mile in either direction, then I suppose she can ferry us."
At Aragorn's request, Saphira agreed to search for a ford. While she explored, they hunkered next to the horses and ate dry bread. It was not long before Saphira returned, her velvet wings whispering in the early dawn sky.
"The water is both deep and strong, upstream as well as downstream."
Once he was told, Murtagh said, "I'd better go over first, so I can watch the horses." He scrambled onto Saphira's saddle. "Be careful with Tornak. I've had him for many years. I don't want anything to happen to him." Then Saphira took off. When she returned, the unconscious elf had been untied from her belly. Aragorn led Tornak to Saphira, ignoring the horse's low whinnies. Saphira reared back on her haunches to grasp the horse around the belly with her forelegs. Aragorn eyed her formidable claws and said, "Wait." He repositioned Tornak's saddle blanket, strapping it to the horse's belly so it protected his soft underside, then gestured for Saphira to proceed. Tornak snorted in fright and tried to bolt when Saphira's forelegs clamped around his sides, but she held him tightly. The horse rolled his eyes wildly, the whites rimming his dilated pupils. Aragorn tried to gentle Tornak with his mind, but the horse's panic resisted his touch. Before Tornak could try to escape again, Saphira jumped skyward, her hind legs thrusting with such force that her claws gouged the rocks underneath. Her wings strained furiously, struggling to lift the enormous load. For a moment it seemed she would fall back to the ground. Then with a lunge, she shot into the air. Tornak screamed in terror, kicking and tossing. It was a terrible sound, like screeching metal. Aragorn swore, wondering if anyone was close enough to hear.
"You'd better hurry, Saphira."
He listened for soldiers as he waited, scanning the inky landscape for the telltale flash of torches. It soon met his eye in a line of horsemen sliding down a bluff almost a league away. As Saphira landed, Aragorn brought Snowfire to her.
"Murtagh's silly animal is in hysterics. He had to tie Tornak down to prevent him from running away."
She gripped Snowfire and carried him off, ignoring the horse's trumpeted protestations. Aragorn watched her go, feeling lonely in the night. The horsemen were only a mile away. Finally, Saphira came for him, and they were soon on firm ground once more, with the rammer to their backs. Once the horses were calmed and the saddles readjusted, they resumed their flight toward the Beor Mountains, the air filled with the calls of birds waking to a new day. Aragorn dozed even when walking. He was barely aware that Murtagh was just as drowsy. There were times when neither of them guided the horses, and it was only Saphira's vigilance that kept them on course. Eventually, the ground became soft and gave way under their feet, forcing them to halt. The sun was high overhead. The Rama River was no more than a fuzzy line behind them. They had reached the Haderach Desert. The Haderach Desert. A vast expanse of dunes spread to the horizon like ripples on an ocean. Bursts of wind twirled the reddish-gold sand into the air. Scraggy trees grew on scattered patches of solid ground, ground any farmer would have declared unfit for crops. Rising in the distance was a line of purple crags. The imposing desolation was barren of any animals, except for a bird gliding on the zephyrs.
"You're sure we'll find food for the horses out there?" queried Aragorn, slurring his words. The hot, dry air stung his throat.
"See those?" asked Murtagh, indicating the crags. "Grass grows around them. It's short and tough, but the horses will find it sufficient."
"I hope you're right," said Aragorn, squinting at the sun. "Before we continue, let's rest. My mind is slow as a snail, and I can barely move my legs."
They untied the elf from Saphira, ate, then lay in the shadow of a dune for a nap. As Aragorn settled into the sand, Saphira coiled up next to him and spread her wings over them.
"This is a wondrous place," she said. I could spend years here and not notice the passing time.
Aragorn closed his eyes.
It would be a nice place to fly, he agreed drowsily.
Not only that, I feel as though I was made for this desert. It has the space I need, mountains where I could roost, and camouflaged prey that I could spend days hunting. And the warmth. Cold does not disturb me, but this heat makes me feel alive and full of energy.
She craned her head toward the sky, stretching happily.
You like it that much? Mumbled Aragorn.
Yes.
Then when this is all done, perhaps we can return.
He drifted into slumber even as he spoke. Saphira was pleased, and hummed gently while he and Murtagh rested. It was the morning of the fourth day since leaving Gilead. They had already covered 35 leagues. They slept just long enough to clear their minds and rest the horses. No soldiers could be seen to the rear, but that did not lull them into slowing their pace. They knew that the Empire would keep searching until they were far beyond the King's reach. Aragorn said, "Couriers must have carried news of my escape to Galbatorix. He would have alerted the Razak. They're sure to be on our trail by now. It'll take them a while to catch us, even by flying, but we should be ready for them at all times."
"And this time they will find I am not so easily bound with chains," said Saphira.
Murtagh scratched his chin. "I hope they won't be able to follow us past Bullridge. The Rammer was an effective way to lose pursuers. There's a good chance our tracks won't be found again." "Something to hope for, indeed," said Aragorn as he checked the elf. Her condition was unchanged. She still did not react to his ministrations. "I place no faith in luck right now, though. The Razak could be on our trail even as we speak." At sunset they arrived at the crags they had viewed from afar that morning. The imposing stone bluffs towered over them, casting thin shadows. The surrounding area was free of dunes for a half mile. Heat assailed Aragorn like a physical blow as he dismounted Snowfire onto the baked, cracked ground. The back of his neck and his face were sunburned. His skin was hot and feverish. After picketing the horses where they could nibble the sparse grass, Murtagh started a small fire. "How far do you think we went?" Aragorn asked, releasing the elf from Saphira.
"I don't know," snapped Murtagh.
His skin was red, his eyes bloodshot. He picked up a pot and muttered a curse.
"We don't have enough water, and the horses have to drink."
Aragorn was just as irritated by the heat and dryness, but he held his temper in check. "Bring the horses." Saphira dug a hole for him with her claws, then he closed his eyes, releasing the spell. Though the ground was parched, there was enough moisture for the plants to live on, and enough for him to fill the hole several times over. Murtagh refilled the water skins as water pooled in the hole, then stood aside and let the horses drink. The thirsty animals quaffed gallons. Aragorn was forced to draw the liquid from ever deeper in the earth to satisfy their desire. It taxed his strength to the limit. When the horses were finally sated, he said to Saphira, "If you need a drink, take it now." Her head snaked around him, and she took 2 long draughts, but no more. Before letting the water flow back into the ground, Aragorn gulped down as much as he could, then watched the last drops melt back into the dirt. Holding the water on the surface was harder than he had expected.
"But at least it's within my abilities," he reflected,
remembering with some amusement how he had once struggled to lift even a pebble. It was freezing when they rose the next day. The sand had a pink hue in the morning light, and the sky was hazy, concealing the horizon. Murtagh's mood had not improved with sleep, and Aragorn found his own rapidly deteriorating. During breakfast, he asked, "Do you think it'll be long before we leave the desert?" Murtagh glowered. "We're only crossing a small section of it, so I can't imagine that it'll take us more than 2 or 3 days.
"But look how far we've already come."
"All right, maybe it won't. All I care about right now is getting out of the Haderach as quickly as possible. What we're doing is hard enough without having to pick sand from our eyes every few minutes."
They finished eating, then Aragorn went to the elf. She lay as one dead, a corpse except for her measured breathing.
"Where lies your injury?"
whispered Aragorn, brushing a strand of hair from her face.
"How can you sleep like this and yet live?"
The image of her, alert and poised in the prison cell, was still vivid in his mind. Troubled, he prepared the elf for travel.
then saddled and mounted Snowfire. As they left the camp, a line of dark smudges became visible on the horizon, indistinct in the hazy air. Murtagh thought they were distant hills. Aragorn was not convinced, but he could make out no details. The elf's plight filled his thoughts. He was sure that something had to be done to help her or she would die, though he knew not what that might be. Saphira was just as concerned. They talked about it for hours, but neither of them knew enough about healing to solve the problem confronting them. At midday they stopped for a brief rest. When they resumed their journey, Aragorn noticed that the haze had thinned since morning, and the distant smudges had gained definition. No longer were they indistinct purple-blue lumps, but rather broad, forest-covered mounds with clear outlines. The air above them was pale white, bleached of its usual hue. All colour seemed to have been leached out of a horizontal band of sky that lay on top of the hills and extended to the horizon's edges. He stared, puzzled, but the more he tried to make sense of it, the more confused he became. He blinked and shook his head, thinking that it must be some illusion of the desert air. Yet when he opened his eyes, the annoying incongruity was still there. Indeed, the whiteness blanketed half the sky before them. Sure that something was terribly wrong, he started to point this out to Murtagh and Saphira, when he suddenly understood what he was seeing. What they had taken to be hills were actually the bases of gigantic mountains, scores of miles wide. Except for the dense forest along their lower regions, the mountains were entirely covered with snow and ice. It was this that had deceived Aragorn into thinking the sky white. He craned back his neck, searching for the peaks, but they were not visible. The mountains stretched up into the sky until they faded from sight. Narrow, jagged valleys with ridges that nearly touched split the mountains like deep gorges. It was like a ragged, toothy wall linking Alagazia with the heavens. "There's no end to them," he thought, awestruck. Stories that mentioned the Beor Mountains always noted their size, but he had discounted such reports as fanciful embellishments. Now, however, he was forced to acknowledge their authenticity. Sensing his wonder and surprise, Saphira followed his gaze with her own. Within a few seconds she recognized the mountains for what they were.
"I feel like a hatchling again. Compared to them, even I feel small."
"We must be near the edge of the desert," said Aragorn. "It's only taken 2 days, and we can already see the far side and beyond."
Saphira spiraled above the dunes.
"Yes, but considering the size of those peaks, they could still be 50 leagues from here. It's hard to gauge distances against something so immense. Wouldn't they be a perfect hiding place for the elves or the Varden?"
"You could hide more than the elves and Varden," he stated. "Entire nations could exist in secret there, hidden from the Empire. Imagine living with those behemoths looming over you."
He guided Snowfire to Murtagh and pointed, grinning. "What?" grunted Murtagh, scanning the land.
"Look closely," urged Aragorn.
Murtagh peered closely at the horizon. He shrugged.
"What I don't..."
The words died in his mouth and gave way to slack-jawed wonder. Murtagh shook his head, muttering,
"That's impossible."
He squinted so hard that the corners of his eyes crinkled. He shook his head again. "I knew the Beor Mountains were large, but not that monstrous size." "Let's hope the animals that live there aren't in proportion to the mountains," said Aragorn lightly. Murtagh smiled. "It will be good to find some shade and spend a few weeks in leisure. I've had enough of this forced march."
"I'm tired too," admitted Aragorn, "but I don't want to stop until the elf is cured. Or she dies."
"I don't see how continuing to travel will help her," said Murtagh gravely. "A bed will do her more good than hanging underneath Saphira all day."
Aragorn shrugged.
"Maybe. When we reach the mountains, I could take her to Surda. It's not that far. There must be a healer there who can help her. We certainly can't."
Murtagh shaded his eyes with his hand and stared at the mountains. "We can talk about it later. For now, our goal is to reach the Beors. There at least the Razak will have trouble finding us, and we will be safe from the Empire." As the day wore on, the Beor Mountains seemed to get no closer, though the landscape changed dramatically. The sand slowly transformed from loose grains of reddish hue to hard-packed, dusky cream dirt. In place of dunes were ragged patches of plants and deep furrows in the ground where flooding had occurred. A cool breeze wafted through the air, bringing welcome refreshment. The horses sensed the change of climate and hurried forward eagerly. When evening subdued the sun, the mountain's foothills were a mere league away. Herds of gazelles bounded through lush fields of waving grass. Aragorn caught Saphira eyeing them hungrily. They camped by a stream, relieved to be out of the punishing Haderach Desert. A Path Revealed. Fatigued and haggard, but with triumphant smiles, they sat around the fire congratulating each other. Saphira crowed jubilantly, which startled the horses. Aragorn stared at the flames. He was proud that they had covered roughly 60 leagues in 5 days. It was an impressive feat, even for a rider able to change mounts regularly. I am outside of the Empire. It was a strange thought. He had been born in the Empire, lived his entire life under Galbatorix's rule, lost his closest friends and family to the king's servants, and had nearly died several times within his domain. Now Aragorn was free. No more would he and Saphira have to dodge soldiers, avoid towns, or hide who they were. It was a bittersweet realization, for the cost had been the loss of his entire world. He looked at the stars in the gloaming sky, and though the thought of building a home in the safety of isolation appealed to him, he had witnessed too many wrongs committed in Galbatorix's name, from murder to slavery, to turn his back on the Empire. No longer was it just revenge, for Brom's death as well as Garrow's, that drove him. As a rider, it was his duty to assist those without strength to resist Galbatorix's oppression. With a sigh, he abandoned his deliberation and observed the elf stretched out by Saphira. The fire's orange light gave her face a warm cast. Smooth shadows flickered under her cheekbones. As he stared, an idea slowly came to him. He could hear the thoughts of people and animals and communicate with them in that manner if he chose to. But it was something he had done infrequently except with Saphira. He always remembered Brom's admonishment not to violate someone's mind unless absolutely necessary. Save for the one time he had tried to probe Murtagh's consciousness, he had refrained from doing so. Now, however, he wondered if it were possible to contact the elf in her comatose state. I might be able to learn from her memories why she remains like this. But if she recovers, would she forgive me for such an intrusion? Whether she does or not, I must try. She's been in this condition for almost a week. Without speaking of his intentions to Murtagh or Saphira, he knelt by the elf and placed his palm on her brow. Aragorn closed his eyes and extended a tendril of thought like a probing finger toward the elf's mind. He found it without difficulty. It was not fuzzy and filled with pain as he had anticipated, but lucid and clear, like a note from a crystal bell. Suddenly, an icy dagger drove into his mind. Pain exploded behind his eyes with splashes of color. He recoiled from the attack, but found himself held in an iron grip, unable to retreat. Aragorn fought as hard as he could and used every defense he could think of. The dagger stabbed into his mind again. He frantically threw his own barriers before it, blunting the attack. The pain was less excruciating than the first time, but it jarred his concentration. The elf took the opportunity to ruthlessly crush his defenses. A stifling blanket pressed down on Aragorn from all directions, smothering his thoughts. The overpowering force slowly contracted, squeezing the life out of him bit by bit, though he held on, unwilling to give up. The elf tightened her relentless grip even more, so as to extinguish him like a snuffed candle. He desperately cried in the ancient language, "Eke ifrike unshurtagal! I'm a rider and a friend!" The deadly embrace did not loosen its hold, but its constriction halted, and surprise emanated from her. Suspicion followed a second later, but he knew she would believe him. He could not have lied in the ancient language. However, while he had said he was a friend, that did not mean he meant her no harm. For all she knew, Aragorn believed himself to be her friend, making the statement true for him, though she might not consider him one. "The ancient language does have its limitations," thought Aragorn, hoping that the elf would be curious enough to risk freeing him. She was. The pressure lifted, and the barriers around her mind hesitantly lowered. The elf warily let their thoughts touch like two wild animals meeting for the first time. A cold shiver ran down Aragorn's side. Her mind was alien. It felt vast and powerful, weighted with memories of uncounted years. Dark thoughts loomed out of sight and touch, artifacts of her race that